And now for something completely different.
It's a rich man's world. Forget everything you've been told by others before. Get ready for the real deal. The full story. Real talk about money, markets, life. Now, it's The Real Investment Show with Lance Roberts. Presented by RIA Advisors.
It's 6:07 on this free hump day, post-holiday edition of The Real Investment Show. And by the way, if you're in Houston and heading out towards Katy this morning on I-10, just turn around and go home. Somebody messed up on the HOV lane.
Oh, no.
And the whole thing's blocked off. Right outside our office, by the way.
So outbound, if you look out the window, inbound?
Which
direction?
I said heading towards Katy.
Oh, towards Katy.
Yes, okay. Heading to Katy.
Outbound.
Going west.
Yes.
So, yeah, I-10 this morning. It's just a mess. So a couple of big things this morning going on. Obviously, we have the Trump impeachment starting today, and this is now going to start on the Senate. It's going to be 2 whole days. So, I know, right? It's going to be a nail biter for 2 days. You get an hour, and then we're done. This is going to be very interesting to watch. There's going to be a lot of pushback starting today, so kind of watch this. This is going to be more. This is going to be like a popcorn event. So pretty much just sit back, watch what's going on here.
You know what I'm looking forward to?
What?
SNL's version of it this weekend.
Well, it'll be a segment. So
basically, yeah.
About as long as the actual trial. Also, Davos is kicking off. This is the annual event where the world's richest people fly in with the largest carbon footprint on the planet. They have more private jets, more limos, more everything else. And on a per-person basis in Davos, they're putting out more of a greenhouse effect than just about anybody else in the world. But they're there to all talk about the importance of fighting climate change. This is going to be the key topic of the entire Davos event, which is how the world's economic elite can make sure and, you know, deal with climate change while using your money to do so.
True.
Don't misunderstand the fact that this whole climate change, you know, agenda is nothing more than a major money grab for your money. It's government's grab for more money. It's politicians' grabs for more money. It is corporations' grab for more money. Your money. So, and this is the way these agendas always are. This is always based on projects or agendas that never require their own capital. This is always about your capital, what you need to be doing to fix the planet. Again, they're there burning private jets. You know, they're not going over there on sailing yachts and riding bicycles to the Davos event, you know, to kind of lead the way on climate change. No. This is about your money and how to get more of it. So don't kind of really be deluded into a whole lot of this. This is for Wall Street to sell you more products. This is one of the big events coming up in the next 12 to 24 months. A whole slew of new ETFs are coming out your way. Mutual funds, ETFs, new products, new projects coming out that you can invest into, all based around climate change. Of course, they charge you a small fee for these things, but don't worry about that. This is all about how you're going to make more money on climate change. Really is how they're going to make more money on climate change. So, you know, these agendas, we've seen this repeatedly throughout history. Back in the late 90s, it was all about sin stocks. You know, you shouldn't invest in sin stocks. So we came out with a whole slew of mutual funds and ETFs, et cetera, that you needed to invest in that did not include gambling and tobacco companies. When, of course, you lost out on a lot of money by doing that back then. But Wall Street made money from it. Then, of course, in the 2006-2007 arena, it was all about real estate, REITs, real estate investments, those type of things. Of course, you know how that turned out as well in 2008. So don't be deluded too much into this whole climate change event. This is not about you. This is about them, and it's about your money. So just always kind of keep this in perspective. Of course, the other big event that is happening, we got a lot of stuff going on all at once, right? The other big event now is that, you know, we had MERS, which was the Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome. And this is part of the coronavirus family. So coronaviruses only occur really typically in animals. Typically, they don't show up too much in humans. But when they do, they tend to be pretty bad. So we had MERS, which was the Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome. Then we had SARS, which was out of China. Same thing. It was another adult respiratory syndrome and the part of the coronavirus family. Well, we have a new one out that is now spreading around. And I just have one thing to say, is that I've seen the movies. And this is how zombies always start, right? There's always some guy on an airplane that's coughing, and the next thing you know, the world's plagued by zombies. So, you know, I'm ready. Let's get it on. Just bring the zombies. Let's I'm ready for The Walking Dead. Let's get this thing going. But seriously, this is going to be kind of another event. Markets are down a little bit today, trying to figure out, what's going to be, what the ramification of this. This isn't the first time. And by the way, why is this stuff always coming out of China? That's the only other thing. we had the avian flu, right? The bird flu.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you had SARS. It's always coming out of China.
Don't those people wash their hands over there? What?
I don't know. And see, this is Chinese New Year, right?
Oh, that's right.
So this is one of their biggest travel days of the year. And so,
is it today?
It's like here
this weekend.
Yeah. So I was actually talking to a friend of mine over the weekend, and her family is full-born American, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they're of Chinese descent,
right?
But they've been here forever,
sure.
and they don't really celebrate much of the Chinese traditions because they're pretty much they're an American family, right?
Yeah.
But they celebrate Chinese New Year, and so I said, "Well, why do y'all celebrate Chinese New Year?" She goes, "Do you realize that people just show up and give you envelopes full of cash?" And I go, I like this New Year event.
Really?
Yeah. So like grandparents show up and they just bring envelopes full of cash and
I'm changing my name to Ming.
I'm gonna change mine to Cha-Ching.
Okay.
So yeah, because
it's
all
the Ming and Ching show.
Exactly. But yeah, so this is why they're so adamant about Chinese New Year.
So
apparently we need to change our New Year, right? We're all drinking and shooting off fireworks and that. They're giving each other money.
Yeah,
so
I like that.
Yeah, I like this idea.
What is this the year of?
I don't know.
It's the year of the virus.
Yeah, it is the year of the virus, but I don't know. I have to look that up
because
I'm year of the snake was the year I was born,
uh-huh.
And my brother, very fittingly, was year of the rat.
It all works out.
Just kind of little way it goes. But anyway, my wife is what's hers? Year of the pig. Was my wife's.
I would have taken her to be the year of the swan.
And no, I don't think that's one.
Oh.
Don't think that's
trying to help you out here, buddy.
So we'll check. Anyway, got a lot of stuff covered on the show today. Our technically speaking report is out this morning, and we're talking about, look, this is just more of kind of where we are in this cycle. The Fed's influence because of liquidity of push markets to really extreme deviations. And so today's technical speaking report is really talking about eventual outcomes of what happens when you have these extreme deviations. So we kind of look back through history, then look at some of the events, and also look at some of the data going all the way back to really the early 1900s about what happens when markets reach these rather extreme deviations and extensions. We've talked about this a lot lately, but it's important because this is where investors tend to get kind of trapped or really kind of tripped up more than anything else in the market. So that report is out this morning. We'll talk some more about that on the show. Of course, get by the website, realinvestmentadvice.com. Our latest YouTubes are out. Of course, we just released last week our market outlook, which was about a 15-minute video with Michael Leibowitz and myself talking really about what we expect for the course of this year and how to invest for that. So that's also on the website now. Simply go by our website, realinvestmentadvice.com. Click on our podcast, YouTubes. It's all there for you. And make sure to ask questions. We get lots of questions every day by email. Always happy to help you. Realinvestmentadvice.com. We'll be right back.
Get daily investment news you can use, delivered at the speed of the internet. Sign up for the Real Investment Report now at realinvestmentadvice.com.
If the stock market were a highway, 2019 was a smooth ride. Don't expect the same in 2020. If you're 3 to 5 years from retiring or have just retired, you need to attend our next RIA Advisors Right Lane Retirement Class, where we'll cover Social Security, Medicare, long-term care, and now, with the passage of the SECURE Act, why creating a tax-friendly paycheck in retirement is more important than ever. Our next class is January 25th in the Woodlands. Get in the right lane for retirement. Register online now at RIAAdvisors.com. RIAAdvisors.com.
A modern day warrior, mean try. Today's Tom Sawyer, mean try.
And welcome back this morning. It is 6:19 as we kind of get the show underway. So Brent asked me while during the monologue here that, you know, what day is actually Chinese New Year? It's January 25th, which is actually, and it's the year of the rat. So my brother should be right at home. Just joking. Maybe a little. But actually, while I was looking this up, though, I was also born in May. So I'm, you know, my Chinese zodiac is the snake, and my normal zodiac is Taurus, the bull, right?
So, okay, yeah.
So I just happened to be reading, you know, apparently 2020 is going to be pretty good for Taurians. So if you were born in the month of May this year, 2020 is an auspicious month for travel and financial blessings. June 2020 will come with good health and new opportunities for Taurians. July 2020 is a good month to pursue a new skill and develop your chances for procuring a better job. And August will see you come into money from an unexpected source.
Really?
Yes.
Let's see, August. Isn't that the end of a quarter?
I don't know. It's just somewhere in the month of August.
I'm just thinking quarterly bonus for you, you know?
No, that's September.
Oh.
So, yeah. But August. the quarterly bonuses, that would be expected.
Yeah.
Right? So this is an unexpected source.
Oh, an unexpected source. Okay.
You know,
yeah.
Like your relatives. Like your executive producer kicks the bucket and leaves you money in the will.
Yeah, that's going to happen.
Which part, kicking the bucket or leaving you money?
Probably the bucket.
So, anyway. But actually, I always love Zodiacs because they're always positive, right?
Yeah,
if you read Zodiacs never tell you that something bad's going to happen, right? It's always very positive and uplifting. So it's a great way to kind of start your day. Read your Zodiac because it's always uplifting. And basically, you're either going to always find love, money, or some unexpected treasure. So you're always on the hunt for something.
Yeah. Like that spare set of car keys you lost last year.
Exactly. So it's always something. President Xi, we're just talking about this new coronavirus that's now broken out, and they haven't named it yet, so I guess we'll get the new nickname for it is.
I know where it comes from. It's from unsanitary bottling conditions.
No, it comes from Reese's Monkeys. Haven't you seen the movie Outbreak with Dustin Hoffman and Rene Russo?
No, I did not see that movie.
You've never seen that movie?
No.
It's actually very good. It's Rene Russo, Dustin Hoffman,
yeah.
And who was the actor in... I'll think of his name in a second.
Okay.
He's very famous. Just started a complete blank now. But anyway, so it's a movie about basically this guy comes in contact with, he smuggles a Reese's monkey into the U.S. illegally, and he contracts a virus, and it starts an outbreak. And so the U.S. government decides that this outbreak, it's kind of taking over this entire town. So the government decides that they're basically going to firebomb the entire town to solve it. Of course, Dustin Hoffman, Rene Russo, they have to save everybody. So they wind up doing that. But it's called Outbreak, and it's actually just a good movie.
It's the ultimate iteration of the broken window theory.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, it's got Danny Glover in it. I can't remember the guy.
I'll go research.
No, I'll just look it up real quick.
All right, okay.
Because, again, it's kind of it's interesting because it's a lot about what's happening right now.
And that explains a lot.
Yeah. I mean, it's 1995.
Okay.
So it's not a new movie by, you know, any stretch of the imagination.
Back in the last century.
I know, right? That's hard to believe. Like when you watch movies, it's like, yeah, that was prior to the turn of the century. Cuba Gooding Jr.
Oh, Cuba Gooding. Yes.
Yeah. So that's
show me the money.
Kevin Spacey is also so in the Dustin Hoffman, Rene Russo, Morgan Freeman. Sorry, to Danny Glover. Morgan Freeman, Kevin Spacey, Patrick Dempsey, Donald Sutherland, Cuba Gooding Jr. So it's got an all-star
How
cast.
How could you fail with that?
Right. No, yeah. That's what I'm saying. It's got an all-star cast. So I mean, it's actually pretty good. But anyway, so but back to this idea, right? So President Xi has said that anybody that covers up having the coronavirus will be basically nailed to the pillar of shame.
Nailed?
Nailed to the pillar of shame. You know, China is very big about shaming people.
Apparently.
Because they have a whole app now that if you are behind on your payments on credit.
Oh, the social credit thing.
They have social credit, so they basically publicly shame you and your friends won't associate with you if you've got bad credit. But that's how they really control their population is through public shaming. They're you know, not being shamed is very important to them. So
you shall be shunned.
Exactly. Yeah. So now if you cover up symptoms of the coronavirus, and here's the problem with the coronavirus, which is that you don't know you've really got it because it starts out, you just kind of feel like you've got a cold bug, right? So you get a little sore throat, you have a fever, cough. It has a lot of the same symptoms as the flu. So you really don't know that you've got the coronavirus until really kind of after the fact, because initially you just kind of think, it's, you know, got a little cold bug, right? So just, you know, go take some Tylenol and take some Theraflu and I'm all good. But, you know, this thing can't kind of keeps going because you can't kill it with that. So, but they are working on a vaccine, which is also like the movie Outbreak. That was the whole point of that movie, was them trying to get the vaccine put together.
Yeah.
But they are working on a vaccine to try to get this knocked down pretty quick. So, but again, this kind of goes back. And again, you know, markets are off this morning. We've seen this before. We saw this with the swine flu. We saw this with the avian flu. So we've seen these things occur before, and they do have the potential to spread. Of course, if you try to travel right now, if you are traveling over the next, you know, few days, just be aware they are screening at airports very heavily, particularly because, again, this is a big travel year for the Chinese. So a lot of Chinese are flying into the United States. So just be aware if you're traveling, you're likely to get some delay because they are checking for the coronavirus and trying to stop imports of that. Because, you know, this is the interesting thing. There's actually a mobile phone game called Virus. And you actually, it's interesting because the point of the game is that you start with a basic virus and you start mutating the virus to try to get it to spread across the entire world. And it's basically a map of the world showing people travel carrying your virus and how viruses spread, you know, through the global environment because of air travel. People get on an airplane, they infect everybody on the airplane. The people, when you land at the place, all those people go in multiple different directions, get on other airplanes, they infect other people. And, you know, this is the problem. And so, you know, the issue with these viruses is they do spread very quickly because of the proximity of our traveling and how we infect other people. So this is why it's a concern. And this is why markets are concerned. Obviously, if this thing turns into a much bigger outbreak, they can't get it under control. There are economic ramifications of these of this type of a virus, particularly if it mutates. And the big concern is it does mutate into something else. There's already been three people that have died from it. Typically, the people most susceptible to these type of diseases are the elderly, because their immune system is weaker and they don't have the ability to combat these. And so this is where they typically see more of the deaths occur, will be in older individuals because of the weakness of their immune system. But again, this is why markets are concerned about it right now. And this is, you know, why the CDC's on this at the moment. And again, you're going to experience probably some travel delays, et cetera. Just kind of be aware of that. So over the weekend, another Tesla fire occurred.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Another crash and fire. Somebody died in this one, unfortunately. Oh. So this is going to be bad. But again, this is, you know, when are people going to start learning not to let the car drive itself? This is becoming problematic.
It's, yeah.
You know, you have a lot of these accidents are, well, why did this car get into an accident? Well, it was on autopilot and the car is not designed to run on autopilot just yet, right? I mean, it's still experimental technology to a large degree, and they definitely don't have the bugs worked out of it. So use a little common sense driving your Tesla and keep your hands on the wheel.
Please.
Please. So when we come back from the break, a couple of things that we'll get into, you know, in particular is talking a little bit about, you know, this thesis of the market, which is this entirety of the bailout of what? And this is the question that we continue to wrestle with is who's bailing out what and why are we bailing them out at this point? And I got a couple of good questions over the weekend by email. So we'll get into those when we come back from the break and talk a little bit about why things are the way they are and why things likely aren't going to change anytime soon. But does that really matter? And we'll talk about that when we come back from the break. You're listening to Real Investment Show right here. I'm your host, Lance Roberts. Don't go away.
Real Investment Show podcasts are now available on iTunes.
Listen anyplace, anytime
at iTunes.com.
If the stock market were a highway, 2019 was a smooth ride. Don't expect the same in 2020. If you're 3 to 5 years from retiring or have just retired, you need to attend our next RIA Right Lane retirement class, where we'll cover Social Security, Medicare, long-term care, and now, with the passage of the SECURE Act, why creating a tax-friendly paycheck in retirement is more important than ever. Our next class is January 25th in the Woodlands. Register online now at RIAAdvisors.com. Get in the right lane for retirement, RIAAdvisors.com.
And welcome back to the show this morning. I'm your host, Lance Roberts. You're listening to the Real Investment Show, and of course, talking a little bit about kind of what's going on in the world. And you know, one of the things that you know we've talked about here on the show, both Michael Leibowitz and I, and we've discussed this kind of at different length, different levels. And I got a couple of emails over the weekend, really kind of asking about what's going on. Why is it that, the Fed's having to do what they're doing currently in order to support the markets? Because it's very reminiscent of what we saw, and particularly when you talk about the magnitude of the amount of money being put into the system right now. It's one of those things where there's smoke, there's fire, right? So why are we having to do this? And why is the Fed so adamant that this has to be done? And we've speculated on several different occasions about what that reasoning might be. Why is it that all of a sudden the system broke in last September and has now required this immense amount of emergency measures from the Federal Reserve to try to prop up the system? And or is that the case, right? Is it really just a normal operation for the markets? This is what Neil Kashkari, who is going to become a voting member of the Fed, believes. He says, I don't really understand what the big deal is. We're just buying short-term bills, providing liquidity, and doesn't have anything to do with markets. Yet, during the time frame that the Federal Reserve has been doing this, their balance sheet's expanded by about 11.5%, and the market's up about 10.5%. So there's a very direct correlation between, what the Fed is doing and how the markets are responding. Now, people say, well, this doesn't have anything to do with the financial markets. And it's not QE, right? This isn't anything like we used to do when we formerly had QE to boost asset prices. But there's a knockoff effect that's occurring. And whether or not this is actually technically quantitative easing or not is kind of irrelevant. The knockoff effect is the market thinks it is. And the market's been rising in concert with this liquidity coming in. But, the important point here is really taking a look at what could be happening that required this influx of liquidity kind of all at once. And, we go back to 2018. We had the tax cuts, and expectations were that we were gonna have this big boost in earnings. Everything was going to be great. This would be economically beneficial. This is going to create more activity in the economy. This was going to lead to a rise in the amount of revenue the government's collecting from taxes. And it didn't occur. the entire earnings bump that was expected to be gotten from the tax cuts didn't occur. And the revenue collected from taxes actually fell. So we haven't really seen the net benefit of the tax cuts that was expected to occur and within the economy. And, you know, this was the premise really behind having these tax cuts. This expected growth rate in the economy was going to lead to inflationary pressures. And this is where the Fed says, hey, we're going to start kind of tailoring back on our liquidity. They started reducing the amount of the balance sheet that they had, and they started hiking interest rates. And so they hiked interest rates a few times. And in September of 2018, the Federal Reserve made an announcement that, you know, they're hiking rates. They're not anywhere nearly close to the neutral rate, which was the expected growth rate of the economy, which was 3 or 4%. And there were currently about 2. And the market went like, well, what? And of course, over the course of the next, you know, few months, heading into the end of December of 18, the market fell by 20%, because the expectation was the Fed was going to continue to hike rates, liquidity was coming out of the markets. And this was really, this was Jerome Powell's attempt at trying to normalize the kind of the financial situation of the markets and the economy. Learned very quickly, couldn't be done. Everything locked up. Mortgages slowed, yield curve started to invert. In fact, in 2019, we were on the verge of recession. Headlines everywhere, right? Recession imminent. You know, we've got an inverted yield curve. And of course, this was at the point that basically, you know, the Fed backed off of everything and reversed hiking rates, started cutting rates again, and began And then in September of last year, began increasing the balance sheet again, right? Trying to reverse everything that he did has now been completely reverted at this point for the most part. And the question becomes why? What happened so quickly because that required this? And again, you know, when you talk about, you know, the issues within the markets and really kind of within the economy as a whole, it's about leverage. We have more corporate debt than ever before in history. Corporations are more leveraged than they've ever been previously. And in fact, the last time the corporations were as leveraged as much as they are right now was in 1999. The issue is, of course, with leverage is that it's like gasoline. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with leverage. In fact, as markets are rising, the economy's growing, I can put on leverage and I can use leverage to make more money, right? Because I can, you know, the whole point of leverage is I can take a little bit of money, add some debt to it, buy something a whole lot bigger that generates, you know, a profit, and then I can either sell it, collect revenue with it, or, you know, whatever the goal is. But leverage has, you know, allows us to multiply the amount of money that we're making with investment. So leverage, as long as the markets are rising, is a good thing, right? Because it just helps create further increases because of adding all this debt to the system. You know, gasoline inside of a gas can is completely inert. You can put gasoline in a gas can, and as long as you don't set it next to a water heater, it's fine. And it'll sit there for years. Won't be a problem. That's kind of the same idea with leverage. Leverage isn't a problem as long as the markets are going up. However, you know, drop a match into a can of gasoline, you got other problems. And this is the same thing with leverage. If some, you know, the issue with leverage is that everything is fine as long as everything is functioning properly. The problem with leverage is that if something breaks, it is like dropping a match into a can of gasoline. It isn't just that issue. It's that it spreads like a virus throughout the entire financial system, because once the leverage breaks, what was providing for the excess returns on the way up also create excess losses on the way down, because all that leverage has to be unwound. And typically, like gasoline, it has to be unwound very quickly all at once. It's not a slow, orderly process. It's an explosion. What the Fed is terrified of is the amount of leverage that has now occurred inside of hedge funds. How much are we talking about? Hedge funds run multiples of leverage. So a $30 billion hedge fund has 10 times leverage. And much like we, you know, we saw back in 2007, the banks were running 10 and 20 times leverage inside the banks. And that really became a problem when the markets unwound. But hedge funds are running 10 times leverage or more. So you got a $30 billion hedge fund running 10 times leverage. They're a $300 billion hedge fund. And we've got multiples of these. The global economy is about $60, $65 trillion globally. And you're talking about hedge funds that are now leveraged. And talking about hedge funds, pension funds, you know, institutional funds, you know, private equity, you know, all across the board, well north of $600 trillion. So when you're talking about something that is basically the global economy is leveraged almost 12 to 1 globally. You know, so the problem becomes is that if something breaks, and this is what the Fed's terrified of, that if something breaks within the system, this immense amount of leverage that has to be unwound will be unwound very quickly, and it will be something that even they can't mitigate. And that's the big fear. It's too big for them now. It's too big to fail. The entire financial system has become too big to fail at this point, because if something breaks, the unwinding process is larger than all the central banks can afford to muster to try to bail out. It's just too big. And we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, is that we wrote a blog post on this, is that, see, you know, back in the 1999 era, when that bubble bust, most of your baby boomers were in their 40s, 45 years of age. In 2008, 2009, they were basically about 55 years of age, still had about 10 years to retirement. So there wasn't as much of a concern. They're obviously concerned about losing half their money, but they still had time to get to their financial goals. They could recover. Well, the majority of baby boomers are now hitting their 60s. We've got 10,000 baby boomers a day retiring. And so the problem is that it's not just the financial crack that occurs in the financial markets. Yes, people lose a lot of money in the stock market, and that's all fine. Well, it's not fine, but you get my point. It's limited. The problem becomes this time is that if the Fed is unable to stop a break in the system, it's because of all the leverage. It is because of the massive underfunded status that is involved in pension funds, not just domestically, but globally. There's a $70 trillion funding gap globally in pension funds worldwide, and there is a massive number of individuals that are just on the cusp of taking their pension benefits. People are trying to delay that as much as possible, going, hey, you know what? I can work a couple more years. I won't take my pension just yet. I'll work a few more years, go put more money in the bank. It's all good. But if there's a crack in the system, all of a sudden you have a rush of these pensionees rushing to get their pensions under fears that they may not get it if they don't take it now. It's kind of the same fears that people have with Social Security. If I don't take my Social Security right now, I may not get it. So all of a sudden you have a debt crisis followed by a pension crisis, which is $7 trillion just in the U.S. alone, combined with a contraction of liquidity input from corporations who are going to immediately stop buying back shares. And all of a sudden, this is a problem that is way too big for the Fed to bail out. So the Fed's only choice, and what they're doing right now, is to try to stop that before it begins. The only question is how long can they do it? Be right back after the break.
Got questions for Lance later? Ask now at realinvestmentadvice.com.
If the stock market were a highway, 2019 was a smooth ride. Don't expect the same in 2020. If you're 3 to 5 years from retiring or have just retired, you need to attend our next RIA Advisors Right Lane Retirement Class, where we'll cover Social Security, Medicare, long-term care, and now, with the passage of the SECURE Act, why creating a tax-friendly paycheck in retirement is more important than ever. Our next class is January 25th in the Woodlands. Get in the right lane for retirement. Register online now at RIAAdvisors.com. RIAAdvisors.com.
And welcome back this morning, 6:48, as we get ready to wrap up the Real Investment Show this morning. So, in upbeat news.
Yes.
Just stumbled across this article. This is great. So this is a headline story out this morning. The moment we've all waited for. Mile-long asteroid could finally end humanity on Earth. There's a mile-long asteroid floating around out there that experts say could finally end life on Earth. You know, this is the what supposedly, you know, we're not for sure, but we're pretty certain that an asteroid struck Earth, you know, wiped out all the dinosaurs.
Right. And
you have these life-ending events as these, you know, this happens, right? Yeah, I mean, there's all this stuff flying around, you know, out in space, and, you know, you get a mile-long asteroid that plummets to Earth, and, you know, it's going to cause a, you know, kind of an end of civilization event.
Lights out.
Exactly. So, in fact, in 2017, there was this massive fireball that occurred over Japan.
Yeah.
And there was this mile-long streak of, you know, flame, you know, over Japan. And they finally figured out that it was a one-inch piece of this particular asteroid that caused that fireball over Japan in 2017.
Really?
Yeah,
just a
one-inch piece. Toshiro Kasuga, who is a visiting scientist at the National Astronomical Observatory of Japan, said in a release on Wednesday, the potential breakup of the rock could be dangerous to life on Earth. Those resulting asteroids could hit Earth and would obviously wind up into a, you know, kind of an end of civilization type event. The parent body is called the 2003 YT1. You know, the scientists are always very ingenious with their naming. it was discovered, obviously, in 2003. It is made up of actually two parts. The larger rock measures 1.2 miles and is orbited by another 690-foot piece. And the parent body regularly kind of cracks up and, you know, makes space dust. And this has been orbiting out there. So the fear is that at some point this body breaks up and these pieces strike Earth and it causes a big deal. So, you know, this was the headlines out today, the moment we've all waited for. Mile-long asteroid could finally hit humanity. So I'm starting to read this. I'm like, okay, well, here we go. Now we've got the coronavirus in Japan, and if that doesn't get us, it's going to be this asteroid,
mm-hmm.
right? And if it's not the coronavirus or climate change, it'll be the asteroid, one of the three,
right?
So I'm reading the article, and so you kind of get down to the bottom of the article, and it says, this could happen within the next 10 million years.
Oh, well, hey.
So I'm like, I'm reading this article about the end of life as we know it, and that could happen in the next 10 million years. About the same time that climate change, I guess, is going to take effect. So one of the two. We're going to get there.
Don't let Greta know about that.
I know, right? But, you know, it's you know, we have to, you know, always like this. It's always about headlines. But I thought it was funny. It's like there's this whole, I mean, this article's long. I had to read, get through this whole thing. And they talk about the size, the dimensions, you know, how this could occur. And yeah, next 10 million years or so.
That's what you call sticky clickbait.
It'll be there for a while.
Yeah.
Anyway. So, all right. So, as we're talking about the futures are down this morning a bit, really just over concerns of what's happening with this coronavirus or the asteroid, one of the two. I don't know. The way it's been lately, I think if we get bad news and the market rallies, I'm pretty sure if they said an asteroid's about to wipe out the Earth, the Dow would rally for some reason. They could figure out some way to run it up. But I thought it was interesting because Larry Kudlow was out on scene. You know, obviously Davos is going on right now, and Larry Kudlow's out talking about how middle and lower income Americans have benefited the most from tax cuts and economic growth. And it was interesting because the Bureau of Labor Statistics just came out with updated analysis. And this is always the problem with economic data, is that you've got to be careful of what happens with the revisions to the data. And all the wage growth in December was revised. And what I mean by wage growth, all the wage growth back to 2016 was revised away. In fact, wages have now been flat for the last 3 years. And this really kind of corresponds a lot with what we've seen in other areas and other economic data, kind of off-the-run economic data, which also suggests that consumption remains basically at the growth rate of the population, people just kind of, you know, working to get by. You know, we're watching, you know, levels of personal credit debt and, of course, personal savings rates. You know, and actually as how all that filters into the bottom 80%. And again, you know, the problem with a lot of the analysis and a lot of the data that comes out is that it's heavily skewed by those in the top 10%. And, you know, they have a lot of income, they have less debt because they have a lot of income and a lot of assets, but it skews all the rest of the data. So when you start taking a look at average growth rates and averages of these numbers, which includes that top 10%, a lot of this data is very heavily skewed. You know, a good example of that is, for instance, you know, debt to household incomes. If you take a look at the average household, they're running on average about $3,000 to $4,000 in debt annually just to make up the shortfall between cost of living and what they've got to spend and what they have coming in terms of income. So the differential has to be made up with debt. That doesn't occur at the top end of the spectrum, right? So I've got plenty of money to cover my income, and so whatever debt I'm using is simply a little function of leverage. You know, I don't pay cash for my house, I have a mortgage, that type of thing. But their debt-to-income ratios are substantially lower than it is for the bottom 80% of the economy. And this shouldn't be surprising at all, because the majority of people do and are. I mean, we know the statistics by looking at it. Average household has, you know, less than $1,000 in the bank, can't meet a $500 emergency. You know, we've heard all these stories. And, you know, that's why Dave Ramsey's so popular, right? 80 million people, you know, follow his website. Why? Not because they're burgeoning in wealth. They're trying to figure out how to get out of debt. So, you know, it's we know that that actually is the real situation. But the data, as we look at it, is heavily skewed by what happens at the top end of that curve, particularly in the top 1%. Study out over the weekend, the top 1% have more wealth now than the bottom, like, 4 billion people in the world. So, you know, it's just, it's that skewing of the data that leads to the issue. And I thought it was interesting because, you know, inequality is what people are upset about. And you've got this whole group of individuals, the ultra rich, in Davos right now, talking about the economic world outlook, right? And their focus is on climate change, not solving the inequality problems, not trying to get the inequality problems, you know, situated, not trying to create better economic prosperity for those at the bottom of the income ladder. No, they're more concerned about climate change, which I'm not saying is not important, but that's not what economic forums, quote unquote, and strictly with the ultra rich, should be about. This is basically just a gaggle of a bunch of rich people getting together, figuring out how to make more money from everybody else, right? So, you know, this really isn't about solving world problems. Don't be deluded that it is. They're not there to help you. It's more about how to help themselves and how for them to get richer. And that's okay. I mean, you know, it is what it is. But it's interesting because this is going to be all over, you know, the press over the next few days. About, you know, they're gonna have a bunch of risk people. You know, they've already had Ray Dalio this morning talking about how cash is trash. And we're gonna see a lot of this stuff coming out over the next few days out of Davos. But again, it's just, it is what it is. You got to just kind of take it for what it is. But I wouldn't buy into a whole lot of it. And, you know, this is gonna be a lot of spin. It's gonna be a lot of promotion of what their goals are. Which are not necessarily always in your best interest. In fact, probably most of the time they're not. Anyway, as we kind of really get into the rest of this week, as you know, we're going to be seeing a few things. One is the continuation of the Fed, and this is going to be kind of really the topic du jour for the next couple of months until the Fed kind of figures out what it can and cannot do. But economic data should start to show some signs of improvement. This is good news because the data is now, because we confirm everything on a year-over-year basis, right? So what was the growth in quarter one of GDP versus quarter one of last year? That data is going to start to improve, not because the data is actually that much better. It's just less bad than it was a year ago. So we're going to start to see some improvement. And the economic data, and this is going to give some encouragement that the economy has gotten through a soft patch and that we're back onto a growth rate and earnings are going to start to improve. But that's going to really be kind of the key story here, is to watch what actually happens with earnings. Estimates are still very high here, and we're likely going to see those estimates begin to fall. We've already seen those estimates coming down. In fact, the estimates for 2021 are now lower than the estimates were for the end of 2020 in April of 2019. So the whole curve of earnings have fallen, but you know that should start to stabilize here. And then again, that's where markets are going to kind of be looking for some signs of improvement, that the economy has gotten through this soft patch and maybe potentially be back on the road to recovery. We'll see how that starts to work out here over the next couple of months. But again, the year-over-year comparisons are actually quite easy right now. So we're already starting to see things like the city surprise index is improving. We should start to see some economic data improving across the board. And that should help the markets at least temporarily find some support. But it doesn't mean that we're not going to have a correction in that process. So make sure you get by our website today. Read our article about extensions and eventual outcomes. And make sure that you're doing the right thing with your money. Send questions, comments. What do we do to help? Let us know. RealInvestmentAdvice.com. But stick around because Chris Salcedo is coming right up. It's a rich man's world. It's a rich man's world.